We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you, a Tuesday edition of the show, and glad to be back with you as we ran. What? It's Halloween week? What in the world?
Get your inflatables inflated.
Well, I didn't understand why Adam walked in dressed as a giant hot dog, but I do now. Halloween week.
It's Tuesday.
We are going to look one final time at NC State. Adam has petitioned to talk about this game for every podcast between now and the end of podcast season, but I will allow him to row that canoe one more time. So we're going to just one final look back at the Pack game. And, of course, don't forget, if you want a more in-depth breakdown of the game, you can go back to the Rapid Reactions podcast that came out on Saturday evening. We'll kind of gloss over things today, but we spent about half an hour talking much more specifically about games and plays and moments and things like that on Saturday, and we will do that for every home game the rest of the season. So still have three more of those. Carolina still has Wake, Notre Dame, and Western Carolina at home. So all those will be coming up later in the year. Also, we have our interview with Larry Miller. Told you that last week. Larry Miller, one of the all-time greats, and I think one of the best players at Carolina that you don't think about a whole lot. But Larry Miller recently wrote a book. We talked to him about that, some of his, quite honestly, kind of wild stories, and some Carolina basketball stories as well, of course. So that's coming up. I think you're going to enjoy that, particularly as Adam and I have said on one of the times that we've been with you, there is an era of Carolina fan that Larry Miller was the guy. He was the James Worthy or Michael Jordan or the Tyler Hansbrough or whatever kind of defining, Antoine Jameson, whatever defining player you want to pick out of an era, Larry Miller was that for an era of Carolina fans. And so we have that conversation coming up, which I hope you enjoy. Adam has a list. We're going to story time it up today as well. So a good show on the way. Adam, by the way, how are you?
I'm ready.
You're ready.
It's difficult to pod in this hot dog ensemble.
That's right.
But I do it every Tuesday, so it can't be that difficult.
A reminder that the show is brought to you by UNC Healthcare, and UNC Healthcare is dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. You can see their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. Adam, it's been a couple of days now since that win over NC State. Mac Brown had a chance to talk to Coach yesterday. He also met with the media yesterday. And number one, the win hasn't gotten any less sweet as the Tar Heels really, as we talked about, dominated the performance. I think, again, as we talked about in depth on Saturday, Carolina's physicality, the ability to get some turnovers, all played a role. I thought something that Mac Brown talked about that I thought was correct, and it makes sense when you talk it out, is he said he thought the success Carolina had in stopping the run went hand in hand with them getting more turnovers. Because he said, look, you get to the point where you're stopping the run, you get the other team into worse down and distances, you know what they're going to do if it's third and 12, more than likely, and that helps you. Now, in this particular game, obviously one of those interceptions was a juggled ball in the end zone, although he also said, he talked about showing that play to the team, and he said, look, the coverage was blown on this play. He said, and Don Chapman could have just sat there and gone, oh, man, I messed up and everybody's going to be mad at me. He said, but, as we know, Don hustled back and had the opportunity because of a mistake by the NC State player to go in there and swoop in and get the pick. So he said he felt like he and his staff were able to use that as a teaching moment for the team about just the way that they want those guys to play. But anyway, the stopping the run hand-in-hand with the turnovers, that particular play, I thought it was interesting that he referenced that as a learning opportunity for his guys.
I bet that was a jolly film session on Sunday with both the big plays like the Don Chapman play and the smaller plays, but that football players love, like British Brooks running over a defender. I bet it was raucous up in there.
Yeah, I had forgotten. I mean, there are a lot of British Brooks type of plays, like Javonte Williams running. I forgot that one where Emory Simmons caught a pass and just – It wasn't quite a stiff arm. It was more just a throwing the guy off of him as he tried to make a tackle.
He just threw him down.
Yeah, it was impressive.
Spoiler alert, I've been looking at some of these for the Thursday video pod, which if you want to see some, I'm guessing you should probably watch it. And there really were an inordinate number of those types. It was Sam Howell's block.
Yeah. But Mac Brown. Oh, Adam, he don't want Sam down. He said, look, I told Sam, I love him, but I want him back there throwing the ball, not down there running. He said, they're not going to run any ISO power plays with Sam Howell as the lead blocker. But I am sure everyone enjoyed watching that one again because it was a pretty good, but it was a strong block.
I feel like the day is coming very soon when Sam Howell is going to have a super Mongo enormous passing game.
Yeah.
Because some defense is going to decide, we have a better chance. Some of the Carolina receivers have dropped passes. We have a better chance to put 8 or 9 guys up at the line of scrimmage and try to eliminate the run and see if they can beat us catching every single pass. I like our odds better there than I do trying to stop Michael Carter and Javonte Williams one-on-one. And the day that defense tries that, Sam Howell's going for 400.
If I'm not mistaken, and I'm very early in my prep this week, Adam, I think Sam Howell threw for 5 touchdowns last year against Virginia. Virginia has struggled to defend the pass this season to this point. Now, Virginia also is traditionally a pretty good defensive team. Bronco Mendenhall's a defensive guy. So we'll see. But I agree with you. There's a 450-yard, 4-touchdown day in there for Sam Howell. It's just that Carolina hasn't needed it. And I do think that some of what Carolina is doing offensively, I mean, the results speak for themselves. I think some of it is to protect the defense a little bit because Carolina's defense is so beat up in the secondary and they're trying different combinations of guys. And I'll say, I think somebody who really, and I don't think it's caught the attention of the coaching staff this week, there are a lot of positive talk about Day-Day Hollins. I think the coaches really thought he played well in this game against State. He's somebody who got forced into action late last year and did pretty well. He was banged up early this season, but I think that he's worked his way back up to being somebody they feel really good about. Jay Bateman said something, and this may not be the exact quote, but something similar to we're better when he's on the field than not. So, I mean, and again, it wasn't maybe exactly that, but something like that. So, I guess the point of what I was saying was Carolina's still trying to figure out the best combination in that secondary, and they've had to be creative with the combination of players they've put out there because of injuries and all the different things. But I also think they're learning some of what they have and who they feel best with.
Could even be a situation where it changes week to week based on matchups. Maybe the best fit this week is not the best fit next week, or the best personnel this week. Maybe you juggle it a little bit next week. But I think a Day-Day Hollins type story is what Carolina, quite honestly, needed to have happen in order to not look so susceptible back there. And if he can become as good a playmaker as his name is, then he'll be good to have on the field, because Day-Day Hollins sounds like a baller.
Yeah, that sounds like a lockdown corner.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't throw it Day-Day's way.
No. In the pregame meeting, the offense is like, all right, this half of the field belongs to Day-Day. You don't want to mess with that.
Yeah, guys, we got Storm Duck, Tony Grimes, Day-Day Hollins. This whole field shut down, boys.
Yeah. Now, on the other side of the field, Adam Lucas plays over there. You need to heat that up.
See if you can find that 5'6 linebacker out there.
Yeah.
One final thing, at least for me, that Coach Brown talked about that I hadn't really thought about until he said it was, and it kind of got lost in this game, he talked about how happy he was that Carolina handled the onside/squib kicks that State – remember, State did that, I think, either two or three times in the game where they tried to sneak in a type of kick to maybe, like Virginia Tech did, get a cheap possession and get a little closer in the game. And Mac Brown talked about how happy he was that Carolina had managed those situations, and that he felt that outside of Atkins' missed short field goal, he thought it was the best overall performance by Carolina's special teams to this point this season. And those are the kind of ones that, like State being down 24 points and trying to squib kick or something, you don't think about at all when you just recovered and go on. But if you mess it up, then all of a sudden it becomes a big deal. And so I thought that was a good point.
If I'm not mistaken, Carolina ran back at least one kickoff and one punt in that game.
Yeah, they did.
That might be a season record.
Yeah. Since that Syracuse game, Tar Heels just had not even attempted many returns. It had been one total in the games against BC, Virginia Tech, and Florida State. One of each in the three games. One kick return attempt, one punt return attempt. And they had one of each in this one. Not a huge result. I think Michael Carter was 21 yards on the return, and Newsom had an 8-yard return. But, man, Daz, when he does it, you can see there's the potential there. He's going to break one at some point, you feel like, because he's so good in the open field that it just feels like it's going
to
happen.
And he makes quick decisions, which you have to for a punt return, because there's that one opening, and if you don't take it, it's over.
Yeah. Carolina played 66 guys in the game, and they were really another young player. We're talking about Day-Day Hollins, who's just a sophomore. Dez Evans, Miles Murphy, both guys. Clyde Pender played in this game. All guys that Mac Brown mentioned as freshmen who played and will likely continue to play and see some more time moving forward. I think we talked about that a little bit on Saturday, but I think especially Dez Evans right now is somebody that you may start seeing a lot more of.
And it feels
Tony like Grimes, another one.
When Miles Murphy's out there,
he's big, man.
He does noticeable things.
Well, there was a play, I think State was going right to left, and the play happened on the near sideline, which would be Carolina's sideline. It may have been in that time period where State was just throwing bubble screens and swing passes every single play, where Miles Murphy, who's 300 pounds, came hustling from behind, and he made the tackle, like 4 yards down the field or something. That's the kind of stuff. You're going to get more time when you do stuff like that.
Yes.
So,
Carolina plays hard.
Absolutely.
The interception play you're talking about is one example, and so is the Murphy play. There hasn't been one time. Carolina's messed up some.
Sure.
But there hasn't been one time where you felt like, I'm not sure everyone out there is going all out, which I think you attribute that to coaching, both when you see it and when you don't.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Carolina, even in the game in which it has played the poorest, Florida State, Tar Heels, the effort level has never been in question. Adam, anything else? Just kind of wrapping up Saturday and the win over NC State. How's your dad? You need to understand this. Adam's dad is very his biggest game is the state game. It's not Duke in basketball or whatever. It is where Adam's dad is, it's state. That's who he is most concerned about.
Absolutely, that is true. And he is giddy.
He's feeling fine.
I think he feels...
He may go celebrate with a soda pop from CVS.
And pay full price.
Yeah. Oh, whoa, Adam.
Well, it wasn't a national championship. Maybe just one two-for-one coupon. I think he feels like the lady I saw on the way out of the Smith Center. Out of Keenan Stadium on Saturday. I was walking out kind of in close proximity to her, and one of the helpful, friendly ushers said to her, like, see you next time. Hope you had a fun afternoon or something. Sure. And she goes, I'd put her at about 65. She goes, I'm going to tell you something. I haven't had this much fun since COVID started. It was that kind of day. Yeah. I think that's how dad feels too.
Take that, COVID.
Yeah.
Okay. Adam, anything else football-wise? I think I cut you off. You may be about to say something before we move on to basketball, or to our Larry Miller interview, I should say.
It seems unlikely that I was going to say something important.
Oh, by the way, tip of the cap to Chasserat, ACC Linebacker of the Week. Second time this year he's gotten that.
I don't wear a cap with my hot dog costume, but I tip my costume.
One day, Javonte Williams, you'll do enough to be the running back of the week, but he hasn't gotten it once. Not once this year.
It's like Roy Williams or Anson Dorenson, Coach of the Year.
Right. Yeah, certainly Javonte Williams. Yeah, how could he have ever earned a Running Back of the Week award? Just keep chicken trucking and tell Pablo and Cash we said hi. All right, let's get to our interview with Larry Miller. It is brought to you by the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. Texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for 5 seconds. That's just a ballpark. At highway speeds, that's like driving the length of a football field with your eyes closed. Trusted choice, Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. Want you to stay safe behind the wheel. Put down your phone. Let's have a hands-free NC. To learn more, visit trustedchoice.com and find an agent near you. Adam, as I said, Larry Miller, two-time ACC Player of the Year, listed as one of the 50 greatest players in ACC history when that list came out in the early 2000s, which, Adam, I got bad news. We're going to have to do the 75-year here soon. One of the best at Carolina. He was part of the group that helped Coach Smith turn Carolina into the program that it became under Coach Smith, and just a really, really good basketball player.
I assume you'll be on the blue ribbon panel for the 75.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Probably chair it.
Yeah.
I think, but with all those achievements, I think if you weren't part of the Larry Miller era, you don't know as much about him. You wouldn't immediately recognize Larry Miller highlights, and it's because you just haven't heard as much from him. So it was fun to get that opportunity.
Well, come out of that, we have Adam's list and a story time on the back end of our conversation with Tar Heel great Larry Miller. Here on the Carolina Insider.
We are extremely excited today because in Pod World headquarters today is probably the best Carolina basketball player from whom you have heard the least in Carolina basketball history.
That's probably right.
And it's Larry Miller, who we haven't heard a lot from, and now he's sitting right here. So all the things we've wanted to know, we're going to find out today. And Larry, not only do you have a lot to say, you've got a new book, Larry Miller Time. Why was this the right time to tell the Larry Miller story?
It was just a confluence of situations that came about. There was really no plan in my part to go write one, but I happened to run into these folks, Stephen and Nancy Demarest. They came by to see me at my house in Pennsylvania, and the subject of a book came up just casually, and that's how it happened. So,
what was that process like for somebody who had not done it before, and as you said, wasn't really thinking about it?
Well, I was thinking about, I had saved some of the letters from the time the kids wrote me back in college, sent them back to the house. My mother saved them for me. And then I said, well, you know, I've been thinking about maybe writing some kind of quirky book, Those Crazy Carolina Kids, and then interject it with some of my stories from college. But I said, it was only a thought. And then we just kind of threw it back and forth, and it turned out to be a major book.
Did you like the process of going back and telling all these stories and thinking about all these things again and putting it down on paper?
Well, actually, I enjoyed it, but I thought about it also. This is a way to share some of the past with the people of the present, because there was a lot of good stories in there, and a lot of people had never heard them. And it was such a good journey for me, growing up that way and coming to Carolina, and the thought that we could share that. And Stephen does a marvelous job of painting the picture.
So, Larry, what is a favorite? We don't want to give away the book, of course, but do you have a favorite story or two that you told in the book that are really funny or memorable for you?
Oh, they're all memorable. I mean, seriously. But I can't really pick one right now that stands out, but there's a lot of good humor in it. There's a lot of serious stuff. There's a lot of everything. And a lot of it happened right here and with interaction with Coach Smith, because that was kind of a growing process for him and me, you know, when we got together, because he was just starting out. Of course, I was new here, and the program basically was starting out. So we had some good stories, about going to church and stuff like that, where he had rules and I didn't have those same rules. And eventually we did reach a middle point there, but because Coach Smith wasn't, one to joke around like I was, but he was a good man and a great man, I should say, and I'm glad I really met him.
Now, my dad was on campus when you were on campus, and from as long as I can remember, he has always said Larry Miller was the coolest guy that he had ever seen. Why were you so cool?
I don't know. I can't tell you that, but I brought some stuff with me, personality-wise, that I carried. In other words, I didn't walk the same path that everybody else did. And I guess that probably is what he was talking, about.
How so? Like, what would a normal Carolina student do that maybe Larry Miller didn't do, or what did Larry Miller do that a normal Carolina student didn't?
Well, that was my secret.
So you are from Pennsylvania originally, correct?
Yes.
So why was Carolina the choice for you when it came time to make that decision?
That's a good question, because Duke had really recruited me first. Actually, right at the end of my freshman year in high school, Vic Bubas came up there to the mountains of Pennsylvania where we had a basketball camp, and we ran into him. But and I came down here to visit here, and for some reason I got hooked up with Carolina. But I did like the South. It intrigued me. And plus, some of the guys I knew from my area came down here. Bobby Reedy came to Duke. So he influenced me. He said he loved it down here, and I came to see why. And then I met Billy Cunningham, who was a New Yorker also, and then Bobby Lewis, who was from D.C. So they got along really well down here. So I fell in love with it.
As you mentioned, you and Coach Smith were pretty different. So what was it during the recruiting process that made you think, I'd like to go spend 4 years with him?
Actually, it was 4 years here. I didn't come because of Coach Smith. But then when I was here, I really cared for him. But I really came down because of the being here and being with the guys that were on campus at the time. So, and the school, of course, was beautiful. And I knew it was a good school. A lot of people, they had rave reviews. And it was just a beautiful place to be.
That was still so early in Coach Smith's
tenure at Carolina, and he was still growing as a coach at that point in time. Could you see early in his career things that he would eventually accomplish here, both on and off the court? Could you see that there was something a little different about him?
You know, I really couldn't. I was just, I think this was a journey that we made together, a growing process, a learning process, and, you know, an endearing process, basically. But I didn't have that vision. I had hoped. Sure. I had hoped for it, but and fortunately it came about. We were very fortunate to have, and this all had to come together. This wasn't like it just something fell into place. This was a work in progress, and I knew we had to have some of these other guys to make this thing work, because Bobby and I couldn't win. Maybe Billy and Bobby and I could have won together, the three of us.
Right.
But we were lucky enough to get together because of the rules. But as we went forward, when Bobby and I were together, we knew we had to have some help. And that next class was the key, you know, the Grubauer, Rusty, Joe, Bill Bunning. We had to have that class. And then, of course, Charlie, you know, topped it all off after that. So, but that was definitely a masterpiece of work together.
You mentioned Bobby Lewis. Of course, longtime Carolina fans know the L&M boys. What was it about the two of you that worked so well together?
Well, we were both very intense players. I had seen him in when I was in high school, and he was in high school, in a tournament up in Pennsylvania. The B'nai B'rith tournament was up there every year. It had players from New York, Philadelphia, Washington, and then Eastern Pennsylvania. And all great players came through there. Dave Bing, you name it, came through there. And Bobby was an MVP my senior year in high school. So I had seen him play in high school, and I knew how good he was. And I said, I really like to play with that guy. You know, I think we have, you know, we have the same energy for basketball. So that's how I really got there, when I saw him. And Billy, of course, recruited me when I came down to visit. You know, he was a senior here. And he was a kind of happy-go-lucky guy, great player. Like to have a beer or two, you know, every once in a while. And I brought that with me, too. Because I came from a beer-drinking family and a community, basically. We had a brewery, a block away from my house.
Oh.
So, I grew up on that, too. So,
Adam mentioned this when he was introing you, but I think maybe two of the best players in Carolina history that you just don't hear much from, yourself and also Bobby Lewis. I'm not asking you to speak for Bob, but why has it been for you that we haven't heard from you very often through the years until now?
I don't know. I'm not a very, loud or
outgoing. See, yeah.
Well, I'm outgoing when I'm with people, you know, people I know real close, but I don't go out looking for, you know, interviews or anything like that.
Sure.
I kind of kept quiet. That's all it was. I let my career, you know, just go under the wraps there after I retired. And, you know, I didn't do much interviews or anything like that. It wasn't by, I was trying to hide, but just, I'm a very quiet person. Oh, introspective and you can tell.
So tell, what was Carolina basketball like? I mean, we all know what it's like now. We know what college basketball is like now. What was it like to be a part of it then?
Well, it wasn't as anything like it is today. It was pretty quiet. Yeah. But when Carolina started to win, it really changed a whole bunch. There weren't big crowds back then. You know, we played in, when I first got here, we played in Woolen Gym. That's where the varsity had played. And then we played as freshmen there. Mm-hmm. And then they opened up Carmichael right after that. And then we started to win, and they started to fill up the place. And then it got to be, you know, statewide enthusiasm. Yeah, it was pretty intense. There's a lot of fanfare, a lot of, you know, what do you call it? High school kids, you know, writing and, you know, wanted to know everything about, you know, their favorite players. And so it became a statewide thing because that was before they only had, I think they only had maybe one game a week being broadcast.
Right.
And, you know, it didn't have to be Carolina. It was just one game. That was before the networks came out, the ACC network. But then there started to be a lot of fanfare and, you know, hoopla. But the ACC tournament was always a big thing. And that was probably one of the most intense things that I've ever been involved with was that ACC tournament. Now, we only lost one game in my time there. It was one game by 1 point to Duke.
That's right.
And we were actually up in that game 19-12. And we lost 21-20. That's we played the four corners against them, which, by the way, was not a slowdown offense. It was meant to be an offense.
Right.
But if people didn't come out to get you, then it became a slowdown deal. And Duke, I was surprised, didn't come out to play me and Bobby. But the tournament was so intense, though, that 3 days was like, you know, really gut-wrenching. I wouldn't let my parents come down for that because I couldn't spend any time with them because I was too wrapped up inside. Because he didn't play until evening, and you had all day to be around the hotel because we used to stay in hotels because we played like at Greensboro or Charlotte for the tournament. And it was so intense, though. And then by the time we got to the NCAAs, like my senior year, we had actually played six games and won six in a row. So we would have had to win seven games to win the national title.
So if the Tar Heels had Larry Miller and Bob Lewis, why did they play the four corners against Duke?
Because we didn't have the height that they had. And we were guarded by bigger guys. And for us to get an advantage, we'd take them one-on-one, and we could drive on them. And we did that a lot of games during the years, too. We played Ohio State, the four corners, when they had, like, some really big, good players. And we ended up scoring. We won by 10 points, scoring 80-some points. And Bobby was, like, 15 for 18. I was 16 for 19. Because we were shooting layups or open jump shots. That's what it was designed for. Well, Phil Ford played it. You saw him play it. He was probably the best four-corner player, you know, that we've had at Carolina. And but that's what it was designed to be like that.
So go ahead, Adam. You go.
Well, I think so the consensus is Larry Miller could score. And I think the consensus is Larry Miller knew how to have fun. What happened with this party at Kentucky?
Oh, nothing happened to it. The party went well. It was just the aftermath that didn't go so well. But at least we got an understanding. After that, I didn't have any more parties on the road. I took care of my business, you know, by myself, basically. But nothing happened there. It got a little loud, out of hand. And one of our players was on an academic scholarship. So he was a little bit more vociferous than anybody else. And he got the attention of some of the coaches who, when we got back to Chapel Hill, the message was plain and simple. He said, I don't care who you are or where you came from, but if you guys ever do that again, you won't be here. That was his message. So I took it to heed.
So Larry Miller, two-time ACC Player of the Year.
Only Tar Heel ever to do that.
Yep. On the list back in 2002 of the 50 greatest ACC players to ever play. When you hear stuff like that, what's that How does that make you feel? I mean, is that something you're proud of? Do you think about it at all at this point of your life, or was that just in the past?
Well, yeah, you think about it once in a while when somebody brings it up, but
when some idiot like me brings it up, right?
That's that's okay. I don't dwell on it, but I'm proud to be part of it, and I'm proud that I was a Carolina person when I did it. Mm-hmm. So,
you mentioned that you almost went to Duke, or you were at least you considered Duke. It always seemed like Duke had it out for Larry Miller. What was it about Larry Miller that got under their skin so much?
Well, I didn't know they did. I know the students.
Right, yeah.
Well, they do that to everybody, but I guess they knew it because I was so close to coming there. And I really was, because I woke up the morning of the night that I signed with Carolina, and I didn't know where I was going that morning. And I asked my parents, and you heard the stories about how parents, you know, direct their kids to certain places. I said, well, what do you think, Mom, Dad, time to make this decision today? Like, I wait till the last minute to make it. But they said, well, Larry, you know, we like either one of them, you know, whatever, it's your decision. I said, well, don't you have a certain feeling for one of the two? And, no, it's up to you, really, it's up to you. So that's how close it was. After he wrote me a nice letter afterward, and I didn't have the guts to open it until after I graduated. And I told him that, too. I said, you know, because I was, when I told him I was, when I almost told him I was going to go to Carolina, you know, I had tears in my eyes because it was that close. So
you played in the ABA for several years after your Carolina career was over.
Yeah, about six.
Yeah. What? You always seem to hear kind of crazy stories about the ABA. What was it like being a part of that league?
It was crazy, just like you said. Yeah, there were stories there. I could have wrote a book on that whole experience there, because it was so volatile. It was sometimes disorganized, sometimes mayhem, sometimes some of the. I was with a player called George Lehman. If he and I had stayed together, we would have been one of the best guard tandems of all time, because we played so well together, and we could score on anybody. Mm-hmm. But we only played a short time together. But we knew where each other was going. And if anybody had any sense, they would have kept that combination together. And said he said something off key to somebody in the office, and he was gone the next day, traded, just because of something he said.
Right.
And there was nothing made any sense. A lot of decisions. There was no direction sometimes. Not everybody was like that. I met some great coaches, but some of the people were just weren't basketball people.
And it's a shame, because there were great players in that league. I mean, the basketball was great.
Terrific. We started the direction of the NBA, mm-hmm. you know, with the fast-paced offense, the three-point shot, the running, and red, white, and blue ball. Excuse me. So, yeah, it was definitely talent. Well, Julius Erving, you came through there. Charlie Scott, of course, who's in the Hall of Fame, and went to see him get inducted. That was a nice trip.
Speaking of Charlie Scott, he said you were the winner who made Coach Smith a winner. What do you think that means?
Well, Charlie knows what he's talking about. He'd get a kick out of that.
What was it like for you to see his journey that he was taking at Carolina, Charlie Scott?
I was proud of that journey. Yeah, I'm glad to be part of it. I'm glad I helped, you know, bring him here and have a couple years together with him. And he's such a good person, and he looks quiet on the outside. I mean, when you see him, but he's a character.
So, I mean, were you guys aware of the significance of what was happening
with him being a part of Carolina basketball at that time?
Yes, I think we were. And we told him coming in here that, you know, we knew it was going to be tough on him, but if there's any problems, we'd be, you know, prior to what you hear today, we got your back. Mm-hmm. We told him, you know, we'd take care of him, which was the same thing. And, you know, wherever, you know, we went anywhere, we always looked out for Charlie. And he appreciated that, too, because he was a quiet kid coming in. And it was a tough situation for him, too.
Sure.
And I think the whole campus took that under their collective selves to look out for him, you know, and you know, to keep the crowds in order and stuff like that, so that we didn't have much racial slurs or anything like that. But and we told them on the road where the people did get, you know, nasty, that we really got kept close to them after games and stuff like that.
So as someone from Pennsylvania who is now in the South at that time, seeing this, what was your thoughts?
Well, I wasn't used to it, obviously. But we had some black players up where I was at, you know, pretty many of them, matter of fact. And I didn't realize what was going on down here when I came down here. I didn't know they had segregation in coffee shops and stuff like that. But Coach Smith helped in that prior to us getting here. And he looked out very much for everybody, because we had a black player when I was a freshman, Willie Cooper.
That's right.
He was the first, really, I think the first one I played with down here. But he didn't play on after that. But we didn't see anything too bad here.
I'm not sure people fully realize how big Larry Miller was in this time frame we're talking about. But even after you left Carolina, you came in contact with all sorts of people who people have heard of. Weren't you at some point friendly or something with Jim Brown, the running back, when you were out in L.A.?
Yeah, I met him, yeah, because when I played in L.A., obviously, I got to meet some of the athletes out there. But on one day, I was with a guy named, I forgot. Anyway. We went up to Jim Brown's house after I was at a party, and I got to meet him, and it so happened that he was playing one-on-one. He had a court out in the back of his house, so he asked me, you know, if I wanted to play, and I said, you know, I'm not in a playing state right now, but I'll definitely play. And he whipped me the first game because he was really physical with me, you know. And it was his home court, you know, so I was nice. But then the second game, you know, I did beat him. And then he invited me to stay and have dinner and drinks with him and his entourage.
His entourage of what?
I can't. There was just a lot of different people. Some were clothing, some weren't.
That sounds like a normal day around here, Larry.
That's right. Yeah.
Didn't you at one point date Clint Eastwood's secretary?
I did one, just a date, that's all.
How'd you meet her?
I don't know. In L.A., you never know how you meet somebody.
Things happen.
She could have been hanging out at Jim Brown's house.
Yeah, you never know.
Playing one-on-one and on the court.
But there were some actresses out there at his house, yeah. And like I said, some of them weren't clothed. They were swimming.
Do you ever look back? I mean, do you ever look back on this whole journey and just go, that's unbelievable that happened? I mean, just all the different stops and experiences and things that you've been a part of.
Actually, I thought it was normal.
Yeah, if you're in it, I guess so, right?
Yeah. Now that I look back on it, it is kind of, you know, cool.
See, back to your dad, Adam. It's cool.
See, Dad was right. I think the first time I ever realized that Dad knew what he was talking about was when I read Pat Conroy, and Pat Conroy mentioned you. And I think he said that you had a dark fire.
Yeah. That.
What do you think that means?
I don't know. Stephen showed me that. I never saw it before he started writing this this book. But I guess the guy knows what he's talking about.
So Larry has gone out. He's signed some books. He's going to sign books in the future, and we'll name some spots where he's going when we put this to air. We'll make sure people know where he's going to sign some books. But have you enjoyed interacting with Tar Heel fans, and what are some things that they say to you when you see them?
Well, actually, this is the first day that I've had interaction with Tar Heel fans because the books I've signed prior to this were up in Pennsylvania. So this was the first time this morning. We were at Hillsboro, and we had some Tar Heel fans there come out for a book signing. And they were all very positive. Some of them actually saw me play, and some of their families knew who I was and stuff like that. So it's all been good, all been real good.
Did you realize, or have you yet realized, how important you were to people, especially of that time? You are their guy.
Yeah, it's beginning to become clear through the, we have a page, Facebook page, and where people can post things like that, and it's where we interact a little bit. So yeah, it's becoming clear that, and I got to thank those people for posting pictures and stories and things from the past. It's really been wonderful.
I was going to say, so how does that make you feel for someone who very clearly is proud of what you did, but it's not the most important thing that's ever happened in your life? But how does it make you feel when these other folks come and bring these stories to you and go, oh my gosh, I loved watching you play? I have to think that makes you feel pretty good.
Oh, it does. I'm happy that I was part of it, and I'm happy that I did something that made other people happy.
Sure.
So, yeah, very much so.
Post-basketball, what was Coach Smith's importance to you? How did he stay in touch with you, and what role did he take?
Oh, he always we always had contact. He made sure we tried to get together once a year somewhere, whether it be I come down to see a game, or I met him on the road somewhere, or we had a dinner or lunch during the summer, or wherever it was. We always tried to have at least one visit a year, even when I was in Pennsylvania or wherever it was. But we always contacted each other by phone or letter. So he was very, very aware of everybody, all of his, you know, teammates. Every one of them was important to him. And that was clear by the $200 check he sent after he passed away to have dinner on him. That was...
What'd you do with yours?
I had dinner just like that.
What is, as you look back, what does being a part of Carolina basketball mean to you?
Well, it's obviously it's priceless, because you know you have this thing for life with people that you know you couldn't buy. You can't sign up for. Yeah, you got to be part of it to be involved. And once you're in it, you're in it for the good. And you know, everybody who's involved in it feels the same way, even if you never played against the guy or with the guy. He has the same feeling you have, so you have something in common. You share. So it's good to be a Tar Heel.
We appreciate Larry Miller's time and certainly hope he had success with his book, Larry Miller Time. Adam, have you read? You've read the book or some of the book.
I have. A lot of stories in there. Don't think that just because you heard Larry Miller on the pod that you don't want the book.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stories in the book that you didn't hear on the pod.
He couldn't even pick one that he liked the best.
Right. That's how
many
good
ones there are.
Yeah.
Again, Larry Miller Time. Check it out. Show brought to you in part by LS Tractor. By the way, I think I've had to have this PSA once before. And it must be me. I must not be doing it right. It's the letter L, the letter S, Tractor. Not Ellis Tractor, like E-L-L-I-S. It's
ILS tractor. Kind of like IMG college, right? Don't let your outdoor or outside chores or projects cause you to miss any of the Tar Heel game action. Let LS Tractor help make short work of them. From normal yard maintenance to larger projects as well, LS Tractor has the machine for you. Visit lstractorusa.com to see the difference. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? Adam?
How did that even come to your attention? Did someone come up to you and go, I love my LS Tractor? And you're like, oh no, that's a different brand. You want LS Tractor.
Yeah. So, friend of the pod, David Culp.
Leslie Davis.
Yes. Dave Culp, his wife, Locke, wanted to nominate somebody for the hometown hero.
Well, I hope she sends it in once she does, because I got to tell you, I think there's room for some nominations. You're supposed to copy us.
Yeah. So she wanted to nominate someone, and he said, hey, can you remind me of how we do it? He said, I looked for Ellis Tractor, but couldn't find it. And I said, oh, well, it's LS, not Ellis. So maybe that was part of the reason. I said, you know, maybe that's why you couldn't find it. But if you need it for future reference, and I checked it myself, Adam, GoHeels.com/hero, GoHeels.com/hero. Big old button right there says nominate a hero. You can just put Adam's name right in there.
If it's not already pre-filled in.
Adam, one reason you are all of our heroes is your list.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Well, the first item on the list we've already kind of touched on. Because it concerns the Mike Copeland interview, which has generated huge potty buzz.
Yeah, it has. It's really getting a lot of chatter.
I'm concerned it might be too early for potty buzz, and what if people don't remember it next summer? We'll have to see. Yeah. We don't know how the potty voting works.
This will be one that stands the test of time.
So I get to the football game on Saturday, and I see my parents there.
Mm.
The very first thing that my dad said to me was, he walked up to me and he gave me like the come here, like surreptitiously. Yeah. So we huddled up and he goes, you know, your mother's really been wondering about that New York story. Do you think you could tell it to us?
So did I make a mistake? By putting the beginning and the end of that story in the pod compared to completely taking out. Maybe. Should I have foreseen that by doing that, it would just make people thirsty for the information? Probably. However, Adam, that is not going to change my stance. We can't air it. We just can't. And so,
until the last pod. Right.
No matter how many tweets or emails or DMs we get of people going, look, I know you can't air this story, but you can tell me this story. We can't. I'm sorry. Unless you're Adam's dad, who I assume Adam told the story to.
I did.
You have to be a blood relative.
And I'll tell you his exact reply. When I finished the story, actually, I think this was my mom. She goes, that doesn't seem that bad.
Oh.
And I said, well, I think that depends on if you are that person. And she goes, yes.
So, don't you worry. We're going to keep making smart decisions moving forward.
Yes. Certainly, we would never do a pod in a way we have never done it before on a Tuesday. A new member of the 100% Pod Listener Club, Wayne Miller. Actually, I like how Wayne just casually mentioned that. He didn't want a lot of attention or confetti or things like that. He just a side note.
Guys, just so you know, 100%.
Yeah, just letting you know. Jones.
Yes.
I've seen you all over social media early this week. Yeah. You have blanketed the internet with your Raise a Racket campaign. What's going on there?
Okay, so Raise a Racket. Normally they do a big tennis tournament for UNC Children's Hospital. Obviously can't do it the same way this year with our current situation in these challenging times. So they have pivoted, Adam, and it's an online fundraising initiative for UNC Children's Hospital. This goes to a specific fund to help out with the UNC Children's Hospital. And what they have done is, we mentioned this, I think, at some point, where every week in October, someone around Carolina was putting up a challenge for an amount of money to be raised that particular week of the month. And if that fundraising goal was hit that week, then there would be some kind of hilarious payoff. For example, Corey Holiday and Dre Bly had their fingernails painted Carolina blue for the Virginia Tech game because whatever the donation desire that week was achieved. So this week, if we raise $8,000 this week through the Raise a Racket Fund for UNC Children's Hospital, we will release a video of me doing a TikTok dance with my 12-year-old daughter. She's got to teach me the dance. You're not going to see the whole... You won't. It's not going to be like Dancing with the Stars where you see the sausage being made. You're just going to see the final product where she and I will do a dance. I told her, I was like, look, because we've already been talking about it. I said, look, it can't be... She was going through some options. Surprisingly, Adam, all of them, I was like, I don't think I can do that one. Nope, that one seems a little long. No. So we're trying to narrow it down to a relatively short one. So we will. That will be coming out later this week if we hit our $8,000 fundraising goal this week.
Is she prepared for her TikTok followers to explode when you get on there doing the Macarena?
I've been pushing hard for the electric slide.
Look, I've done this at a dozen weddings. I don't even need you to teach me. Think of the time we'll save.
So be on the lookout in case that happens.
Where can I go to donate to make sure this happens?
The website is unchf.org. So that's UNCHF, which I think stands for Hospital Fund, unchf.org/raise-a-racket. unchf.org/raise-a-racket. Any amount of money, of course, is welcome. It goes to, I didn't even give you the name of the fund, it's the Farm Family Fund, which helps families who are dealing with UNC Children's Hospital. They have a child in the hospital for an extended period of time, something like that. So, wonderful cause. We work a lot with the UNC Children's Hospital. My wife and I were on the board of the hospital at one point. We're not currently, but we have been in the past. Work a lot with them. They do such great work there, and look forward to raising $8,000 and showing, putting Adam to shame with some dance moves. Don't get Adam jealous when you see me breaking it down.
I do not think that I will be. And if you want to be part of making Jones do the TikTok dance, you have to contribute before the end of the week.
Yes, it has to be this week.
Don't say, well, I'll probably do that next week. That won't help us see Jones doing the lumbata.
Yeah. What if it gets down, Adam, to like $7,990 and you had to give the extra tip?
I'm in.
Would you do it?
I'm in, yeah. I'm in. This was to be the first year of the Fenway Bowl, which had an ACC tie-in.
Of course.
It will not be happening per the slender, tall, mustachioed gentleman, Brett McMurphy, who reports that
Are you talking about at Blods?
No. There will not be a Fenway Bowl this year. The first one will be next year.
ACC keeps trying to do stuff at Fenway Park and can never quite make it work. Maybe. Nature's trying to tell us something.
I'd like to issue a bit of a mea culpa, if you will. to everyone out there who has children and has been bumping that Roddy Ricch and Rod Wave music in the car on Leaky Black's recommendation. If you'll think back to that interview.
You were stunned when he said that.
I was surprised when Leaky told us, we said, Leaky, can you listen to that music with your children in the car? And Leaky goes, oh, yes. He assured us. And Jones said, family-friendly entertainment.
Yep, I did.
It's family-friendly entertainment in the way that Kansas's late night with Snoop Dogg was appropriate Midnight Madness. Don't look up. Well, you can look it up, but I wouldn't recommend listening to Roddy Ricch with your young children in the car, because they will learn some things that you might want to talk to them about yourself instead of having old Unky Roddy Ricch do it. I learned that the other day myself.
We always love talking with Leaky, always. Between that and him saying that Kerwin Walden made 120 consecutive three-pointers.
Every time before he leaves the gym.
The details may have been fuzzy on these two conversations.
That's what happens when you do interviews by Skype.
Yeah.
I think Leaky said some other words that then just went up into space.
It got lost in translation a little bit.
And didn't come all the way through the internet.
Yeah.
But that's just what you have to expect.
Well, you can confirm this. We had this weird scenario with Leaky where anytime we made any noise, we couldn't hear what Leaky was saying.
Yes.
So like Adam and I had to like hold our breath, because normally we'll laugh or we'll say something with the, but we had to be completely silent while Leaky was talking, or it would bleed over and we couldn't hear him. So he probably better explained things and we just missed it.
It's probably because Leaky was on the NASA space phone.
Yeah.
That
it
he
really
uses for his personal use.
It was the single clearest video call I've ever seen. It was better than if Leaky was in person. That's how clear it was.
Yeah, like I would like to take Leaky's phone home and use it for my TV. We want to give what ups. To Cole Holcomb.
Mm.
Cole Holcomb would be good on the pod.
Yeah.
He's never been on. He had a couple big hits on Ezekiel Elliott. He had a sack. He had an interception. He had six tackles. And Washington beat Dallas.
Yeah.
Pretty good day.
Came to Carolina as a walk-on, don't forget, and has now, he starts and is one of the best players on that Washington defense. Good for him.
He's not the only Tar Heel in the NFL who had a big day. Geo also with a big day, probably because he knew it was Carolina NC State weekend and it was time to shine.
Those daggone Cleveland Browns had to go down and get a game-winning touchdown. Had that not happened, it would have been Geo's score with just a couple minutes left for the Bengals. That would have been the game decider. Baker Mayfield.
Now, Jones, I know that when the Tar Heels games are over, you go home and you do nothing but watch other games.
Yeah.
You are in your man cave. It's kind of similar to Brian Kersey's studio in which he watches all the games at one time.
Yeah. I'll get a call every now and then from Jeff Flanagan or something and be like, Jones, was this targeting?
Right. And you're like, I don't know because no one knows. Also, pass interference, we need to talk about that. Thanks for calling. So I know that you were watching the game pitting Virginia against Miami on Saturday night. So,
boy, it was rainy during that game.
Yeah. Well,
get it all out now, Miami. We don't want it to rain when the Tar Heels are there.
Oh, I'm sure it won't. With regard to that game, I had an important question about that contest, which is, what do you think about this ultimate Irish peeler?
What an electric commercial, Adam. So, if you're a veteran of the ACC network, you know that an inordinately high amount of their commercials are infomercials. It's an extraordinarily high amount. It's got to be 70%.
I think that's probably right.
I mean, I'm not making that up, right?
Yeah.
So, there's the socket shelf and the tactical glasses. I think there's the pop lights.
which did, I've told it before, it looked enticing at like
3 in the morning when I was in a hotel room before a Carolina Clemson basketball or something. It's like, man, those pop lights really do look handy.
But I had never seen the ultimate Irish peeler before Saturday. So I don't, it could be a new product. I don't know. Maybe it's been on for weeks, months, years on the ACC network. I don't know. The first time I saw it was Saturday. And Adam, whoever made this commercial should get a raise. They have some dude on there. I don't know if he's the actual maker of the ultimate Irish peeler or not, Adam. You know how they'll have the law firm commercials,
yeah,
and they'll have to put at the bottom, like, this is not actually this guy.
Right.
So, one of two things happened. Either the man who created the ultimate Irish peeler has a phenomenal, maybe fake, maybe real Irish accent, or they held open casting and this guy showed up and said things like Blarney Stone. And they said, you know what? You're the guy. And for 60 glorious seconds, Adam, he is telling you everything you need to know and why you need to have the ultimate Irish peeler. Now, at the end of the ad, he says that he will not rest, Adam, will not rest until every home in the United States has an ultimate Irish peeler. That is an aggressive goal. But Adam, you've done a little research. There's no doubt who the journalist is between Adam and me, because Adam's done a little research here of all the benefits of the ultimate Irish peeler.
I like to imagine that when that guy came in to audition, they called him back and were like, hey, that
guy.
Do
you think the accent's real or not?
Probably not.
Okay.
Like, we've got it down to two, and it's you, and then we've brought in this other gentleman to read, and there's Lucky the Leprechaun. And the other guy's like, oh, don't have a chance.
Here's the other person. It's Tim O'Shaughnessy.
According to IrishPeeler.com, it lists 5 features and benefits for the ultimate Irish peeler.
Well, 1, the confidence you have just by owning it.
2, you'll fit in with every other household in America. Okay, let's see if this persuades you that this is a worthwhile purchase. 1, double-ended to tackle any kitchen job.
Oh, yeah. Well, it showed you. He explains how to peel a potato. I mean, that's the obvious one. But Adam, if you think that's all the ultimate Irish peeler can handle, you're wrong. He shows you how to cut up cabbage. You can cut up the cabbage right there with the ultimate Irish. And it's tiny. It's like little Casio.
2, serrated blade on one side.
Yeah.
I don't know. Julienne, is that right? Yeah. It seems French.
Yeah.
Blade on the other.
Adam, it's Irish.
Yeah, julienne seems French. Blade on the other.
Yep.
Well, that seems good.
Yeah, multi-purpose.
3, we're going to keep it low-key and not try to overpromise. Greatest grader you've ever seen on the back.
I really do question the grading ability due to the size of the instrument.
It's the greatest grader you've ever seen.
Like, Lil Casio can get away with being Lil because he has the buttons. Right. That I need.
Right.
But grating, you need some surface area to grate.
Yeah, like if you've got a block of cheese, is the ultimate Irish peeler going to be able to handle that?
That's a question only the ultimate Irish peeler can answer.
4, grips and won't slip for fast and easy prep work.
Yeah, safe too.
That seems like a lot of words that they threw together. They got down to 4 on the list of features and benefits. They like put some things together that sound like something you'd want to buy.
Yeah.
5, I feel like this should have been higher. Includes potato eye remover.
Yeah, I was going to say, do they have the eye remover in there?
Yeah.
They've got you just pop it around the, you know, you'll get those eyes in the potatoes, little rough spots, put the eye peeler in and pop it out. It's impressive.
Some other details. I feel like they missed the boat by this not being a tactical potato peeler and really combine the best of both worlds.
Yep.
It slices and peels like a hot knife through butter.
Mm.
Also, if you order today, that's only today.
Yeah.
They'll include the ultimate Irish potato spiral absolutely free.
Now, the potato spiral is where my wife actually went, wow, that actually looks pretty cool. They had gotten her. It took 45 seconds in and the extra throw in, but that's what got her. You somehow like stick it in the potato and spin it around, and all of a sudden you have perfect chips.
You might say you dig it into a potato, turn it around, and then open it up into a spiral that comes out crispy, roasted like a chip. It is the perfect side dish for your roasted chicken or leg of lamb.
Adam, I have a confession to make. I created the ultimate Irish peeler. I just gave you the perfect read for that.
Yeah.
I just cut it down to about 7 words instead of 27.
Yeah. So, Tar Heels aren't on ACC Network anytime soon.
This Saturday's ACC Network.
Oh, that's right.
I think Carolina, Virginia. Isn't it 8 o'clock ACC Network?
Do you think we'll get to see the Irish peeler?
Well, I won't know, but you guys tell us if the ultimate Irish peeler is on there.
Or what if they're prepping another product, the tactical salami slicer or something, which sounds serious.
Yeah.
Be careful out
there. Effective out in the desert.
Be careful out there, kids. So we won't know until Saturday, maybe about midway through the first quarter.
I will not rest until every home in the United States has an ultimate Irish peeler.
Don't change that channel during the commercials.
Adam, anything else?
No.
Okay. I have one email I want to read, Adam, and then we have our story time.
Okay.
This email came from Matt Seals. And Matt actually sent it to our Mac Brown show / Roy Williams show email address that we use, which is asktheheels@gmail.com. If you're interested in asking a question for Coach Brown or Coach Williams on a future show, asktheheels@gmail.com. Matt was sending in an email on behalf of his son, Beckett. And in fact, we used Beckett's question on the Mac Brown show last night. Beckett is 8 years old, loves the Tar Heels, listens to the pod, listens to the Tar Heel Sports Network from down in Atlanta. So Beckett, what up? Beckett, Christmas is coming. Get your dad to get you an ultimate Irish peeler. And a little Casio while you're at it. But Matt adds on here, Beckett thinks you and Adam are hilarious on the pod. So if you're trying to assess your target demographic, it's about third grade. Yeah.
We don't need to assess that. Yeah. We already have done intensive market research.
Nailed it. So Beckett, thank you for listening. Thank you for your question on the Mac Brown show. And keep on keeping on. Okay. Adam, Al Hood sent this email in a while ago, and we've been waiting for the perfect time to use it, which we felt like was today. So one part of Al's email is a story time, and one part was referencing something that we talked about after the trip to Boston College, which was how weird that area is with different cities that are all seemingly in the same place. And Al, who said he is a former resident of Boston, wrote in to confirm some of the stuff we were talking about. He said, not only does the Northeast in general have some weird situations as far as the layout of their cities and towns, but that particular area of Massachusetts is especially odd. He said the Boston College campus sits in Chestnut Hill, as we know. Chestnut Hill is a village inside Newton, Massachusetts. However, the edge of the campus rests at the border between Newton and the Boston city limit. It also, according to Al, is a stone's throw away from the town of Brookline, which is a little island town inside the city of Boston that is its own entity from Boston, so far as it actually is in a completely different county. So the Boston Marathon route is along that stretch. So there is a moment when someone who is running that marathon route within a minute will leave Newton, go into Boston, then leave Boston to go into Brookline, and then go back into Boston for the finish. That's crazy.
Jones knew that, but he wasn't able to pay close attention because he was dribbling a basketball when he was running the Boston.
That's right. I couldn't tell all the different cities and townships and island towns.
That actually explains a lot, because we've had to order food to, for example, to the trailer during baseball games, or even this season to the football game. And it's always confusing because they say, are you in Newton? And you say, no, I'm in Chestnut Hill.
Yeah.
Well, Al just explained that, well, really, we are in Newton.
So thank you for that, Al, because that was educational.
That's not even the big part of the email.
Yeah, that's not even the story time. Get Mr. Goosehunkers ready, because Al's story starts like this. In the winter of 2019, Al was finishing up radiation treatment for stage 3 cancer, having completely completed chemotherapy during the fall and start of the winter. The Tar Heels were scheduled to travel to Boston College in their next-to-last game of the season, and Al had made it a point to go see them play every time they were in Chestnut Hill, as he can literally walk to the arena. He lives, at that time, somewhere in the area. Newton, Brookline, Boston, Chestnut Hill.
That's a beautiful area.
Yes, it is. His wife had surprised him with tickets to the game for Christmas. It was a great motivation for Al to get through the radiation treatments, as he had something quote-unquote normal to look forward to during the process. As a way to help surprise me, Al's wife told him she had consulted with a couple of fellow marching Tar Heel alumni that Al had regular ongoing conversations with. We had been talking during Tar Heel sporting events for years at this point. They steered her to the best place to get tickets, she explained. They steered her to the best place to get tickets, she explained. I'm going to, for this next half of this sentence, I'm going to randomly stress the words wrong. So when I shared the news of the gift with them, it wasn't a surprise. The day or two before the game, one of the friends shared a text of a DM he had gotten from Adam, detailing about when the team would be arriving to the area and when the opportunities may present itself to catch the team. Good job, Adam. Just go ahead and give away all the team secrets, buddy.
Yeah.
I replied with a, well, I have to work, so I don't think I'll be able to pull that off. But I thought it odd that as it was... But I thought it odd that as this wasn't the first time I had gone to this game, that he would try to find this information out. Everybody's still with us here. The day before the game, my wife all of a sudden became really insistent that we nail down times and plans for before the game, which I wasn't really that concerned about as, again, we had done this before. She tends to be more of a planner, so again, it didn't raise any real alarm bells. Ah, odd couple. On the day of the game, Al's rushing home from work so that he can quickly change and we can enjoy some dinner. And as he opens his door, to his shock, are these two wonderful friends sitting on the couch with his wife. I was, as you can imagine, surprised. It turns out that from the start, they had coordinated this surprise at Christmas while I was going through chemo. And combined, they had managed to keep this quiet for 3 months. Although that DM to Adam wasn't meant for me to see and almost gave it away.
So, number one, I ruined the team's stealth arrival.
Yeah.
Number two, I almost ruined Al's huge, really fun surprise.
Yeah. But at least I read that part of the story very clearly, so everyone understands what's going on.
The good news is no one clearly understood what I did wrong.
On the morning of the game, both flew from their respective homes, landed in Boston around the same time, and then traveled to Al's home to make sure they were waiting for me when I arrived. It was a wonderful time. Had dinner at a short distance away at what he calls the best pizza place in Boston. Look, Al, I'm sorry. We can't give people free advertising on the podcast, so I can't read the name of this place.
But I will go there, and I'll let you know if you're right, which I assume you are.
Then they walked up to the arena and enjoyed an eventual 79-66 win that wasn't as close as the final score may suggest. During the whole game, his wife got to see him in his full Carolina basketball glory as he basically ignored her to have an ongoing conversation with his two friends like he was back in the Smith Center. After the game, we wandered down to the broadcast location for the Tar Heel Sports Network. This is no surprise here.
Right.
He said Jones was likely engrossed in post-game activities. Yeah, I was doing big work, but big grits. Big work for me, big grits doing nothing. He said he was done, and ever the amazing gentleman chatted for a few minutes and took a photo that helped emphasize how tall he was. Al, great news, says he finished radiation about a week later, had surgery a couple of months after to finish off the process, and a month after that, traveled to Chapel Hill to enjoy the wedding of one of those wonderful friends, wherein we all got another chance to catch up. Best news of the email, Al was shortly declared cancer-free a short time period after that, and is looking forward to all of this craziness being over so that Al can get back to Keenan Stadium and the Smith Center.
Al, what you don't know is that Big Grits is usually done about midway through the second half.
Yeah, that's right. Are the Tar Heels up by 25? Okay. Eric, what do you think? Rebound, Jones. That's what I rebound. Need to rebound.
Throw it into the post. Eric, they haven't shot a three-pointer all game. The post! Get it to the big man. Big man got to eat. Torture chamber.
So, Al, I am sorry that things got a little hairy in the middle of the story there. But other than that, what an awesome gesture by your wife and your friends to surprise you come together and go enjoy a big Carolina win.
Those Boston Carolina folks, I like them. I don't know what it is about that group. The Boston Carolina club's always strong.
Yeah, they're big time Tar Heels, no doubt. Adam, anything else before we close up what has been really some of our finest work?
Yeah, I think you got to go out with it flawless like it has been and don't risk messing up anything.
So we will be back later in the week. We will have the preview of the Virginia matchup. We will have another great guest and a lot more. A reminder before we go that we're brought to you by the College Foundation of North Carolina. Visit cfnc.org for everything you need to plan, apply, and pay for college this application season, now in an easy-to-use and updated format. Something that is quite a collaboration. Let's let Larry Miller and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Larry Miller. See you later, Big Grits. When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meals serve less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner. We'll be right back.
See you later, Big Green.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.